Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, you're first.
Okay. Brandon.
Good evening.
Evening.
We can begin. We're in a deeper Zohar class for the Parsha of Lech Lecha. We're in section 28, and we're going to start at Pasuk 300. I'll start with the L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud Kutshabritu Ishkinte Vitkilu Urkimu Utkilu Utkilu Urkimu Le'achda L'shem Yudhe Bavate Be'yichuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah Vayihino Amadunai Elohino Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kanenei Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kanenei Hu. Pasuk 300. Ad lachata Adam makitim Vayomer Elokim Hine natati Lachem et kol esev Zorea zara Vigomer uktiv lachem Yihye le'achla Vila yatir kewan dechata Vayeser hara Ishaiv begufa Bileya uko Inun toladin avad behodina. The translation. Before Adam sinned, it is written, and Elohim said, Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, and to you it shall be for food, and no more than this. So he was not permitted to eat animals. But since he had sinned, and the evil inclination was absorbed to his body, and to all of his offspring, he passed his judgment over them. In other words, he brought the great flood upon them. My commentary. With Rabbi Ashlag's comments, the pasuk is clear as written. Do you agree that Adam brought or caused the flood? Do you think he brought the Shoah? Questions, comments, thoughts.
Well, that's hard to say. If Adam brought all those events, but if he brought the evil inclination into the world, then if there was a possibility that it would not, the evil inclination would not be there, then maybe all those things would not have happened.
But I I don't think he brought the evil inclination. Hashem is the one who put the evil inclination into place so that we'd have free choice. But
no,
I think as the generations passed, you know, as they continued on, there was an opportunity for every human to make the right choice, to correct what Adam had done. But it didn't go that way. And that's probably not correct either.
Well, addressing Brandy's comments, if we say that Adam was responsible for the flood, then he's also responsible for all the pleasures that happen in the world. Because you can't just accept it for what we consider difficult or bad. He is responsible for both sides. And to respond to what Hannah was saying, that he didn't bring in the evil inclination, but here the translation of the Zohar is that since he had sinned, and the effect of that sin is the evil inclination was absorbed to the body. So the Zohar is saying that Adam's sin had the effect of bringing the evil inclination into the body. Now, what would the world have looked like if Adam had not sinned? So there are some people who say, well, if Adam had not sinned, if he had waited the hour until Shabbat actually came in to eat from the tree of knowledge, good and evil, that the tikkun would have been completed and there was no other reason for the world to exist. And Adam would just have gone from the Garden of Eden back up to the endless world, having caused bread of shame to no longer be an issue. That's one view. Another view is that Hashem would have created, when Hashem helps a mother and a father to bring a child, he creates the soul of the child, he creates the child. When that happens, if the sin had not taken place, then he would have created two angelic entities, one that would have been the evil inclination and one that would have been the good inclination, and they would serve that human being that they were created with and born with. So when the mother would give birth to the child, the angels would come into that child and would assist the mother in the raising and feeding and serving of that human being. That's another view of the world. But the question that's being asked is Adam, the sin of Adam, the mistake that Adam and Chava make, is that the cause of all the negative things that happen afterward? We don't call the flood of Adam. We call it Noah's flood. And what's the difference between what Adam did and what Noah did? What Adam did was do teshuvah. He made a mistake, and he started the process of correcting that mistake by doing teshuvah. We don't hear that Noah did teshuvah. Noah had whatever Ham, his son, did to him when he got drunk, but we don't really ever hear him doing teshuvah. The Torah doesn't attest that he did teshuvah. So the flood is called the flood of Noah, not the flood of Adam. Question we have to ask is why? Why is teshuvah so meaningful? And it does not say that he was allowed to eat meat after the sin. It says that he wasn't allowed to eat meat when he was first authorized to eat food. He was allowed to eat herbs and herb-bearing seed, not even fruit. Although we might say that the fruit trees are herbs, you know, that because we don't know what the translation actually is. What is the Aramaic that's being translated here?
A while back, I know there's a machloket as to what was the fruit from the tree, but
there's seven
maybe
different...
a month or right, but about a month or so ago, from our handouts, there was a real emphasis on the grape, and it made me think that perhaps Noah, one of the first things he did was to plant a grape vine, and of course he got drunk from it, but he might have been trying to repair Adam's sin if it was a grape.
He was. But that doesn't mean he was doing teshuvah.
Yeah, I know, but there was some effort there.
He was trying to repair Adam's sin, another person's sin. We have all kinds of people doing that in our generation. The whole teaching of Olam, what's it? Tikkun Olam. In our generation, what is the teaching about Tikkun Olam? That we need to repair the world. We need to fix the world. How do you fix the world? The Kabbalah teaches you have to fix yourself. But the people who are promoting Tikkun Olam as a social justice, as basic attitudes of helping people, they're not emphasizing, they're beginning to teach Musar. But for the last 30 years, there was no discussion about fixing yourself first. It was always, let's fix the other guy. The world's got a problem, let's fix that problem, which means let's fix what the other guy is doing wrong. It was never recognizing I'm right and he is also right. It was always the zero-sum game. If I'm right, he has to be wrong. But that's not the way the world is. If I'm right, he can also be right. And we can, with words and discussions and working together, we can find a way of bringing the differences of opinions into reconciliation. Now, it's definitely not an easy pasuk to raise this question. You know, what was the cause of the great flood? If we don't say it was Adam who was at fault, and we call it Noah's flood. But what was the cause of the flood? Why did God need to cleanse the world? And then why did he need to promise that he wouldn't do it again?
Well, they're giving a hint in this pasuk, I think, that it had to do with eating meat, you know, unkosher meat. And, of course, in one of the movies, they show him cutting off a leg of an animal and leaving him alive, which is against one of the laws of Noah. Because it's mentioning...
Adam wasn't given that law. Here the Zohar is saying, and Rabbi Ashlag is saying, that Adam was not allowed to eat meat. But you have vegetarians arguing this point all the time, that the mistake that the people made and that caused the flood was eating meat. Treating the animals inappropriately, as Hannah described. But in reality, up until Noah, human beings were not authorized to eat meat. There was no need to. There was no human soul in an animal. But once the flood took place, the souls who died in the flood, they have to have a mechanism to be elevated to the human realm, and that mechanism is eating. But what is the most negative generation in the history of the world? And the answer, one of the answers has to be the generation of the flood. So if the generation of the flood is so negative, and they're vegetarians, why should anybody become a vegetarian today? And the vegetarians argue that everyone should be vegetarian because when you eat the animal, you take in the animal consciousness, which is lower than the human. So how do you resolve these arguments? And what is the right thing for you as a human being to do?
Well, I know when it took me almost a year, starting from scratch, you know, having to get rid of pots and pans and dishes, and it took a while to be able to replace all those things, and I kept them in the boxes, you know, until I was ready to go tevel or boil, whatever I had to do, and it took me about a year. And while, you know, every time I would mark something in the pantry and the refrigerator with an X if it wasn't kosher, and then when it was finished, I'd spend 3 hours at the grocery store. I would go to a store that stayed stayed open all night, and literally just going down the aisles, you know, finding what was kosher, what was not. And at that time, 25 years ago, it was very hard to find a lot of products. But during that time, the only place we could get meat was to be able to go to Houston, and I hadn't koshered I hadn't finished everything, because it doesn't involve just your dishes. It's tubbling, it's doing your whole kitchen, inside your cabinets, your microwave, everything. So it took about a year, and in that year of not having kosher meat, or the availability of it. I just lost the taste for it. And I see with my husband that there's times where he needs the meat. I can kind of tell when he begins to kind of get low energy, and I feel like he does need the meat. And of course, I get the kosher meat, but it's not so hard now, even though it's not available in Lake Charles. Enough people go to New Orleans or Houston, and our grandchildren live in New Orleans, so they bring us turkey and ground meat, so I can fix those things for him. But what I don't like to see are the vegetarians who act as if it's something's wrong with you because you eat the meat. You know, are they wince? You know, in other words, they're acting superior. I don't like seeing that, and I've seen it quite a bit among vegetarians.
It is an attribute associated with some vegetarians, not all.
Yeah. Oh no, not all, but quite a few. And of course, there are more and more.
Then we always have to remember that when we see it in the other person, it's really within us as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that to be critical of you, Hannah.
I can't, you know, we've been invited to children's birthday parties at McDonald's or whatever, and of course we don't eat it. But to me, it smells bad when I go in there.
I understand.
And the same thing, even when I fix Tony's meat dishes, which is very, very seldom, there is an odor to the meat that I don't remember. Maybe I did. I just don't remember it. But I think when you lose the taste, you just lose the taste.
I think it's not so much the meat. It's the blood. Blood has a distinct odor to it. Whether it's coming from a human or it's coming from an animal. And when you cook it and when it's raw.
Well, the thing is, the kosher meat is drained. You know, they have prepared it. And there's two brands from New Orleans. That one brand is really, really nice. The other brand is 80% meat and 20% fat. And, of course, I just said ground meat because I'd always, when I asked the person to bring me some, I had never seen the other. But when my friends from Israel came last year, and, of course, they were meat eaters, so I knew I had to get some meat. But that second pack that was not 100% meat, it still has, to me, I could see little blood in the corner of the package. So I took a picture of the one that's not that way, that's the better grade, so that I could show it to my grandson when he comes. You know, he'll pick something up for me at the Kosher Deli in New Orleans. But you're right. Sometimes, even in Houston, I could see some meat that there was blood in the package. But if you... And both of the packages said kosher. Which should have indicated that it was, you know, high quality, and they were both from New Orleans, not New Orleans, New Jersey, but they were not prepared by the same company. It was a different company, but same state.
There are arguments that are made all the time that we no longer know how to kosher meat properly. Because the mechanism is mass production, whereas in the ancient days, even as close as 150, 200 years ago, it was a shochet, butcher, but who knew it, and basically he was checking each animal one on one. So it was, you didn't have this lack of kavanah. The butcher knew to have the correct kavanah when he killed the animal. And so therefore the meat truly was kosher because that kavanah was injected into the meat that people took home. Whereas today, you don't know who's doing the shechting. You don't know whether they're knowledgeable. And, a few years ago when we had the Rugatin, or whatever his name was, who was sentenced to 28 years, and President Trump just commuted his sentence. But he was running a company where he was stealing funds from his employees. And wouldn't that consciousness enter into the meat? And, now we're getting kosher meat, not just out of New Jersey, but we're getting it out of, South America, and we don't really know what the consciousness is of the people doing the shechting. Mm-hmm. And there's arguments goes back and forth all the time. And there's a second kosher seal that is being used in some places where the company has to verify to the rabbi doing the heksher that their working conditions are above board, that they're not stealing any money and that they're paying all their taxes and they're doing everything above board. And, there are rabbis who have withdrawn their seal, their heksher, when they found lapses in the way they treat their employees. So this is all part of the evolving aspect of our food sources. You get into the GMO discussions the same way. Is a modified corn kosher or not? So you can see that this verse in the Zohar is not written for somebody 2,000 years ago. It's written for somebody today.
Mm-hmm.
We're basically out of time, so. But
look,
we
if I could just make one little last comment.
Sure, go ahead.
In Israel, we were invited for Shabbat dinner. They always fix meat. In fact, most of the time, they would have several salads, several meat dishes, was really a feast. And that was when they invited guests. And they work so hard, to put that meal together. And even though I would put a little bit on my plate because I felt like it was kind of like an insult not to. And, so you do what you feel you need to do.
Now the custom is to find out if the guest is a vegetarian or not and mm-hmm. to prepare meals. Food that they are willing to eat, but the one thing I want to mention to you, and I'm pretty sure you already know it, but there are three basic foods that are considered traditional for Shabbat, both traditional in the Sephardic minhag custom and the Ashkenazi custom. And the
chicken?
No, it's not chicken. The three sources are the challah. The second one is the fish. And the reason that the fishes part of it is because fish is spelled Dalet Gimel, Dag. And Dalet Gimel has a gematria of 7, just like Shabbat has a gematria of 7, a small gematria of 7. Shabbat actually is 702. Excuse me, not 702. Yeah, it's 702. But it's the seventh day. So the dog is served traditionally because it's connecting to the energy of the seventh day, which is Shabbat. And the Hebrew word for meat is basar, which has a gematria of 7 as well. And that's the reason that that all of these foods are served on Shabbat, is because of their connection to the energy of Shabbat.
Mm-hmm. The word I was trying to think of yesterday when we had the word cattle. I could see it on the page of the very first Hebrew book I had gotten, and I think they also defined it as flesh, but I couldn't think of the word. Behemoth came to my mind, but it was bizarre.
Right.
It was the word that I'm glad you said it today, because I was racking my brain trying to think.
But that word. To draw the conversation to a close, because we are out of time, is the idea that I haven't answered any questions that I've asked, because these are questions that everybody needs to contemplate and kind of get to understand what is the meaning in depth in this Zohar verse. Why were they asking this question, and why is it important? And that's the reason that I didn't give you answers, because each person needs to develop these answers for themselves. Our 7 o'clock class is questions and answers, and I hope there will be questions. And we'll hopefully speak to you in a few hours. Shalom Gadol.
Okay. Shalom.
Shalom.
Bye, Brandy.
Bye.